This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else. Hello, and welcome to Comic Book Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. Comic Book Noise can be found at comicbooknoise.com. And it's part of the Deliberate Noise Network. For more details, please go to deliberatenoise.com. Don't know why that's happening. If you would like to send feedback, you can email me. My email address is Derek, that's D-E-R-E-K, at comicbooknoise.com. Or you can call the audio comment line at 734-331-0772. If you would like to contribute to the ongoing, ongoingness of the show, you can go to comicbooknoise.com. And there are three ways you can contribute to the show. You can click on the Patreon page, which is also at comicbooknoise.com/Patreon. Or you can donate Auphonic Minutes, or you can send money directly to me through PayPal. Okay. If you would like to be a patron, I would greatly appreciate it. It's only $1 a month or more to become a patron, just like some of these fine people. Dave Slusher of the Evil Genius Chronicles, Bruce Rosenberger, John, Ken, Justin, Martin, Don, Rick, Nettie Nuchas, and new patron, James. Welcome, James, and thank you all for donating to the show, and thank you all for listening. For everybody who's listening right now, thank you as well. All right. This is going to be probably the type of show I haven't done in a long time. It's where I pretty much take a page by page look at a individual issue. I haven't done that in a while. But not only is that unique, the fact that it is a relatively new comic book, that also makes it sort of unique, because I haven't been talking about new comic books in quite a while. In fact, I haven't been really talking about comic books in the past few episodes. Let me see. There's the one that I haven't posted. There's the... there's one where I was talking about romance. There's one where I was talking about... oh, wait a minute. I did talk about this comic book already. Wow. I'm going to talk about Titans 10, featuring the Fearsome Five, which I did not realize I talked about a couple episodes ago. But with all the stuff, notes that I've taken, I'm not going to just throw them all away. So I do not recall what I said about the issue a few weeks ago, but now I'm about to really go pretty much in depth in it. So this is going to be chock full of spoilers for this issue. If you do not want to know, then come back next episode, and maybe I will be talking about something not spoilery then. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet. But anyway, I was given a code for this book in Comixology. So I am going to... So I read it, and here is the credits. Dan Abnett is the writer, and this is kind of weird because I think this will be like one of the few times I've ever read something by Dan Abnett where Andy Lanning was not involved. You know, because usually they're a package deal. I don't know what happened. I don't know why one is no longer with the other. Brett Booth is a penciler. Norm Rapman is the inker. Andrew Dahlhouse is the colorist. The letterer is Josh Reed. What is going on? Okay, let's see, where was I? Booth, Rapman, and Dahlhouse were the cover artists. Nick Bradshaw and Alex Sinclair were the variant cover artists. Brittany Holzer was the associate editor. Alex Antone was the editor. And Marie Javins is the group editor. Now this, on the cover, it says, Foiled by the Fearsome Five. That's what it says. This is the first Fearsome Five story I've read in a long time. It even took me a while to remember who was in the original incarnation of the group. It took me a while to remember, because, you know, you look on the cover and you see the people and it's like, no, there was somebody else there. And it took me a while before I realized that the member that I couldn't remember was Dr. Light, you know. Dr. Light was actually a pretty decent character until Identity Crisis pretty much ruined him, you know. I mean, it was a good story, good enough story, but afterwards, you know, going back and reading, you know, those lighthearted Ralph and Sue Dibney stories, or the comedic Dr. Light stories from around the time after certain things were revealed. Well, I'm just gonna fucking say it, because like I said, this is a spoiler. So I've given you enough things so that if you haven't read Identity Crisis, I'm about to spoil it. Dr. Light was a pretty good bad guy, you know. Until Identity Crisis, when it turns out that he was a rapist who had his memory wiped magically by Zatanna, you know. And you saw the toll that it took on Ralph Dibney, his mind, as well as Sue's mind and body, you know. And then we're supposed to then, go back and read stories from that happened from, like I said, after the period of the assault. And, you know, Dr. Light is a goofball. And the Dibneys are basically Nick and Nora Charles of the DC Universe, and they're just breezy, lighthearted, having fun, going from point to point. Yeah, and now you go back and read those, and you kind of see them in a whole different light, you know? We're supposed to hate Dr. Light, and what he did was horrible. No doubt. But they took his mind. You know, they took a part of his personality away. And was it a good part? No, but you know, that's what jails and rehabilitation are for, you know? Try to put him in a situation where he will never get out. You know, they took his brain, you know. That, to me, that's just as fucked up, you know. And I know that that's what they were going for. But now, when you read these stories, Dr. Light isn't just comedic. He's got mental deficiencies now. I mean, there's no way else you can put it, right? And if you read the Dibny stories, then, you know, you're actually dealing with a rape survivor who's pretty much in denial, and her husband who's trying to put a good face on everything, but he also comes off as sort of a dick at times, you know? So, I don't know. Yeah, I have all kind of feelings about the aftermath of Identity Crisis. And quite frankly, I don't even know if it's still in continuity, you know? It's the one of the worst things about DC or Marvel flushing and reflushing is that you never know what's in the bowl. You know? It's like, okay, is this water or 7-Up? You know? Is that chocolate fudge or big old pieces of shit with peanuts in it? Anyway, Nick Bradshaw, I just want to say, the cover he does, the variant cover, every time I see his work on covers, I always wonder, is this Art Adams? You know, and once again, it's like, I'm looking, I was like, is this Art Adams? No, it looks like Art Adams. The faces especially look like something Art Adams would do, but kind of not, you know? And, yeah, I mean, it's really cool. If you ever get a chance to see it, you know what? I might try to figure out how to put this on the website, because I really like this cover that he did. Although it's really funny because on this, you see him, you see Mammoth with a bunch of arrows sticking out of him. And in the regular cover, you see Mammoth with a bunch of arrows sticking out of him. And the only one who could put him in there is Speedy Arsenal, Roy Harper, whatever name he's going by. And I'll tell you why that's so funny in a second, right? But immediately when we start the story, we see that Nightwing and Wally West, I don't know if he's Kid Flash or if he's Flash, and this, I don't think they ever really said. We're just supposed to automatically know who all of the heroes are, by the way. Luckily, they don't do that with the Fearsome Five. There are captions that tell us who the members of the Five are. And on this particular page, it's Simon, Mammoth, and Gizmo. And we get a little glimpse into what they can do. You know, Gizmo is the let me get the exact wording. Let me start this up again. Gizmo is the technical genius. Mammoth is a metahuman wrecking ball. And they got kind of cute when it comes to Simon. They called him the brains of the Fearsome Five instead of just saying, you know, yeah, he's got mental powers. But it's kind of funny, so I'll allow it. Yes, am I not magnificent? And then we find out that the two... hold on. Oh, he's just Flash here. No, but they call him Your Flash. Let's see... They're trying to extract their powers, right? With Nightwing, we'll just be extracting a basic skills package, combat, smarts, agility, all that. But with Your Flash there, we'll be grabbing the Speed Force. That's a major power. There'll be a lot of buyers lined up. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's say Your Flash. I don't know if he is. Like I said, if he's the Flash or if he's Kid Flash. Like, oh, yeah, this is just one of those Flashes running around. But they're there as bait, basically, because the rest of the Titans are going to come looking for them. And almost on cue. They didn't have long to wait because you turn the page, the credits page. And I'm assuming this is a two-page spread because I'm reading this on a Kindle Fire, and I have to turn it sideways in order to get a big, you know, whole shot that's not all scrunched down. We see the rest of the team coming in, a surprise attack, right? And this is also when I first learned that this is the finale of a storyline called Made in Manhattan. The title of the story is called Powerless. The reason I'm saying that is because there are two different covers, and on neither one of them did it say anything about Made in Manhattan or this being a finale installment of an ongoing storyline. Nothing. Yeah. Now my notes, I say I recognize Speedy, which is funny because I think he's Arsenal now, but they don't really say. And the reason I recognize him is because he's shooting an arrow into the back of Gizmo's head, but it's like a non-lethal thing, which I think is funny because on the on both covers, like I said, you see Mammoth with all these arrows sticking out of him, which means that he used regular arrows, you know, with the pointy tips. But inside the book, he just shoots his guy in the back of the head with a non-lethal thing that just looks like it's going to push a button or something. Which, quite frankly, all of a sudden it's the Fearsome Four if he comes in and he shoots the dude in the back of the head like that. But I don't think they can show that in the kids' book. Which, this is, guess who they're still going for? Although there's some pretty deep shit that comes towards the end of this book. But I'll just say it like that, right? Yeah, it's a good thing that I'm not a good guy. I mean, I'm not a good guy. I'm not a villain or an anti-hero. Because if I was a superhero, I'd be like a Frank Castle in prison for most of my tenure type of deal. Because there's no way Gizmo would have got up from, an arrowy arrow to the back of the head, period. I mean, as it is, this thing clunks him face first looks like a computer screen with such force that it cracks it, right? And I just watched the Raid 2 yesterday when you see people getting their heads smashed into stuff. Yeah, he wouldn't just be bouncing back either way, but you know, if I'm putting an arrow in it, it's good. The arrow would go like straight through. But anyway, I recognize him. And there's Donna Troy, and I don't know what name she's going by. I don't know if she's Wonder Girl, if she's Troya, or just going by Donna Troy. Which, by the way, if she goes by Donna Troy, worst secret identity blowing ever, you know? But she's in this stance, right? And it can only be described as, and you don't even have to see it to know what I'm talking about, but it's one of those female superhero battle stances that would cause me to rip a groin muscle instantly, right? I look at this and, you know, I have to adjust because it just looks painful, you know? And then those are the two that I recognize immediately. And then as I'm looking at the picture, I'm realizing that a guy in the background has got to be Aqualad, because he's like in an all blue uniform. You know, I mean, he's in a blue uniform, but it looks like Aqualad because of the tattoos on his arms, right? And there's also somebody who is in all green. And at first I thought, is this Ragman? You know, because they made a big deal about Ragman being on the Arrow show. Maybe they're bringing Ragman into the book. But nope. On the next page, I find out that it's Lilith, who's going by the name Omen. Again, because I believe that's the name she used around the Titans Hunt era of the team. But I am not sure, you know. But you get to the next page, and that's when she says, oh, Lilith Clay, right? So, oh, okay, that's Lilith. So we see Omen. Oh, crap. Did she take on... What's that? Her name? Omen. Because I'm thinking around the time that they killed off Danny Chase, she was going by Omen. Or was that Danny Chase who was going by Omen? I know Danny Chase was going by a different name, and shit, I can't remember what it is now. Oh, well. Anyway, so we see Omen taking on Simon. And he says, you made a terrible mistake, Lilith Clay. Your mind is nothing compared to mine. All right. Hold on one second. Oh, okay. We see Aqualad giving Mammoth a punch that knocks him. It basically snaps his whole head to the side, right? But it's left-handed. And I always thought that Garth was right-handed, you know? But, you know, the more I think about it, the more I just realize that that is my own right-handed biases coming to the forefront. I realize that that is something I need to work on. Not everybody needs to be right-handed. But I just would like to point out that he knocked dude's head over to the side, knocked him off his feet when he punched with his left hand. And in a second, I'll tell you what happens when he hits him with his right hand. But anyway, now, while that's happened, Donna and Roy are running to free the other two, right? Now, personally, I would have had Roy running to free the other two while Donna and Garth beat Mammoth into a nice fine pace. But that's why they're the good guys, because like I said, Roy would have been freed up, because the second he came in, he just would have murdered Gizmo, right? Gizmo would have had had his eyes, and then right in between his eyes would have been arrow coming out. But like I said, that's why they're the good guys. Okay. Now, next page, we're showing Donna, who, like I said, should have been beating the hell out of Mammoth, having trouble opening up the tank to let them out because it's a bunch of bad luck that it won't come up. It's caused by the Fearsome Five member known as Jinx, who's described as a probability magician. She's also the character that replaced Dr. Light on the team. Although I could have sworn her name was like Karma, you know? Although now that I think about it, Karma may have been part of the Brotherhood of Evil in Doom Patrol. Possibly. Possibly, you know, I don't know. All I do know is that there was a character in the WWE named Karma, who spelled it K-H. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that had something to do with it. Although I don't know. Like I said, I do not remember. I thought her name was Karma, but apparently not. Although, to tell you, I'm also surprised they didn't put like an extra X at the end of her name, you know, Jinx. But they didn't, you know. So, and again, I'm wondering why they just didn't have Roy use an exploding arrow on the door, because we all know he has one. You know, him with an exploding arrow and an acid arrow, those are just things. I automatically assume Green Arrow, Speedy Arsenal, Hawkeye, that these are the type of arrows that those guys just carry around, right? Both Hawkeyes. It's just like, hey, I'm going to explode something with this exploding arrow. So I don't know why they didn't do it. But then the more I thought about it, is that if he did, then the shrapnel will probably kill or maim Dick and Wally. So it makes sense that they didn't just say, hey, he's just going to start blowing shit up. You know, and it's also kind of like Superman, Supergirl's heat vision. Yeah, you know they have it. But if they just... if that's like the first or second thing they whipped out every single time, then eventually they wouldn't be Superman... or Supergirl, they'd just be Fire Eyes, you know? Yeah, who knows? Anyway, there's a quick fight. And I mean, one of the quickest fights. Jinx uses her powers that makes Roy's brand new bowstring snap, right? And at the same time, Donna is using her shield and she's throwing it Captain America style. But she just wallops Roy right in the back of his head. Right now, luckily, her shield isn't as sharp as Captain America's, or else she just would have like sliced the back of her friend's head wide open. Okay. And I'm really surprised that Steve Rogers hasn't killed more people with his shield, you know, because the thing is sometimes it's just, it's dull, but other times they show, oh, yeah, we can use this to just, like, you know, cut through a door. Right? It can cut through a door, but it's supposed to, like, bounce off somebody's sternum with no problem. Just like, oh, it just bounced off, just knocks me back. No. It should have, embedded itself in his chest. Steve Rogers is a murderer. Anyway. So after she just knocks him out, because remember, she's got demigod powers right in the back of his head. He's a bit of a dope, so he might not notice any brain damage. But while she's apologizing, Shimmer comes out of nowhere. And pretty much just like Shimmer is a matter transmuter, which she opens like a hole in the floor, which Donna falls into. I don't know where Donna goes, but once again, if I'm the bad guy, I'm only making her go halfway through the floor before I make it solid, cutting her in half, right? This is a mild spoiler for this past week's Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but something similar happened where Coulson was fighting a bad guy and he turns on like his version of the laser shield and cuts this dude's face right off. And then you find out the dude is a robot, which I thought was kind of badass. Coulson in the first place, it's just like, oh yeah, kill. Oh, it's a robot. All right. It's not like on Arrow, because I don't know if you watch Arrow, but it occurred to me because there's a big fight scene this past week. They go in, you know, when the show first started, Ollie, was killing people with his arrows. He's just straight up kind of like they should have had Roy doing this issue. He's just going in. And he's just putting, like, arrows right through people's faces, right? Or at the very least, through their legs, and they should bleed out. And if they don't bleed out, they're going to have a limp for the rest of their life, right? And so they can no longer be an adventurer like me. Now, you know, he's supposed to get away from that because he doesn't want to kill anymore. He brings his people with him. Spartan and Wild Dog, especially, they come in with, you know, fiery lead from hell. They're just shooting everybody in sight, which I'm sitting there and I'm watching like, these good guys just killed about 25 people, you know? Yeah. But like I said, if I'm a bad guy, yeah, I'm cutting down a Troy in half, right? That's just me. But next page, we go back to the Aqualad mammoth fight, right? And, you know, we saw them duking it out in the background of some previous panels, but this time we get to see them in their full page glory, right? It's a full page, but it's really two panels. One of them is really huge. The other one is sort of like an idealized panel at the bottom. But anyway, Garth is hitting him with his right hand, and he hits him with his right hand, and Mammoth flinches, and then Mammoth returns the favor by hitting Garth with his right hand and knocks dude through a wall. So my question is this, right? Because they show Garth hitting him with his right, and he's cocking the left back. Now, remember, the left just knocked the hell out of Mammoth. Just put Mammoth's head on a fucking swivel, right? So why would you go with your right hand if your right hand can't do the job that your left hand can? Yeah. Anyway, so you get back to the next page is back to the Lilith and Simon fight, right? And it's on a psychic plane, and the color is actually pretty good because at first you see, in the first panel, you see the colors, you know, Simon with the purple, Omen with the green, and there's a little bit more green in this than purple, right? And so then he's telling her, say, look, your people are all beat. You know, you're the last one standing, basically. Your rescue mission, it didn't work. And so then all of a sudden you see there's a little bit more purple and a lot less green. And she's like, all your teammates are down. And then you see more purple, less green. And he's like, I can feel your defenses failing. You're about to collapse in any second from now. And then all of a sudden you see it's mostly purple with one of the corners of the panel being green. And you can see Lilith's face like, oh, shit. He's standing over there. He's like, yeah, I was wrong about you, girl. Your mind is strong. And alpha level psionic. But unfortunately for you, next page, no assessment scale has ever been able to map my upper limit. And then she's down on her knees screaming. Gizmo is standing behind her. Well, he's floating behind her in that like bug chair of his, looking creepy as shit. And now he's just like, hey, gather him up. We'll strip them of all their powers, he said. And then Shimmer, she's like, yes, Simon. Reduce them to dust, because that's what a bad guy's supposed to do. No, bad guy's like, I'm going to defeat you. I'm going to strip your powers. Now I'm going to make sure you never come back. I'm not going to put you in a, you know, underneath a giant magnifying glass. You know, I'm not going to put you on a table saw. No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn you to dust. And then we'll scatter them across the East River. And no one will ever know they were here. And all of a sudden we hear somebody off panel yelling, I will. Next page is a full page panel. An image of someone, it took me a second to realize, was Bumblebee. You know, now I've always liked the character. You know, she was one of the first black superhero women I'd ever seen. One of the first black superhero women, period, right? She came out a couple years after Storm from the X-Men, but she was the first in DC, you know, which was what I was predominantly reading at the time. Late 70s. So Storm may have come out before Bumblebee, but for me, Bumblebee was the first. Does that make sense? Hope it does, because I explained it good enough. Anyway, as much as I've liked the character over the years, I've never seen her much of a, hooray, Bumblebee's shown up, now the day will be saved kind of character. I just never have, you know. But she looks really badass in this image. She looks like she is about to myrtleate anybody that gets in her way. All right. Love this picture of Bumblebee. Just love it. And the first thing on the next page, Simon's talking huge shit about how the five of them just took down the Titans, and she's just an untrained civilian. And he says, an amateur at best, right? And now even Lilith, her girl, one of her teammates, is like, no, don't, Karen, don't. And she's like, yeah. She goes from Bumblebee, like, I'm a superhero. And then she turns to Karen for just a second, right? And she tells them all that they tricked Mal, her husband, into giving up his powers, which I didn't even know he had. basically, they hurt the man she loves, and she ends a page by saying, "I got this," right? Her face had the that 90s image character teeth gritting on it, like, "I have all my teeth," right? So basically, at this point, we have a mad, superpowered black woman who's looking out to get revenge for her man. My notes, my impression at this point merely say, shit, they never had a chance. I'm going to turn off the Kindle at that point because I already knew how it was going to end, right? It was going to end with a bunch, not a little, not some, but a bunch of ass whooping. And just when it looks like they are about to get their asses, what they do, a quick scene change back to FDR Drive, which I'm assuming is a real place in New York City. But Mal is taking a cab ride to what's called the Meta Solutions building downtown. That's where everybody else is in this sort of fight. And he had like the happiest looking cab driver of all time. I mean, this guy is grinning like a goddamn fool. I mean, he's got his mouth wide open smile. Like, one of those kind of smiles. It's kind of creepy, right? And so the guy's like, hey, why do you have what looks like body armor and nightsticks? Is everything okay? Now, Mal, instead of just repeating the address or saying it was Kevlar night at Paddles or something, you know, or just telling the driver to mind his own fucking business or anything else, or the guy in a black van kicked out of a cab in New York City, he comes up with a lame-ass excuse about dressing up as Batman for a costume party. A quick flashback shows that, like, 10 minutes earlier, he was in Titan's Tower in Nightwing's quarters, taking some of his stuff, right? Some borrowing, because, you know, he needs to. He can't just show up in, what is this, a black shirt and gray pants and just start to go and whoop on somebody. No, he's got to get all dressed up, right? Mask and all that kind of stuff. Now, this one thing I thought was kind of creepy about this whole thing. On Nightwing's bed, right? Nightwing, Dick Grayson, former Robin. There is a stuffed toy of Batman with a frowny face on the bed. You know, so that means if he, and I don't know if him and Corey are still together, or if he brings Barbara in there or somebody else into his quarters, he's going to be getting all romantic with a frowning Batman toy on the bed. Saw that, thought, oh, that's kind of creepy. Then I was like, eh, you know, we all got our kinks, so there we go. Anyway, go back to the cab, and you have Mal, who's pissed off at himself for giving up his powers, and I've got to find out from Peter Rios or Mike Myers what that's all about, what kind of powers he had in the first place, because I always thought, because, you know, way back when in the 1977, Mal didn't have any powers. He had a horn that he would blow that would give him, that would do stuff, but he himself didn't actually have any powers. That was a part of the that was part of the fucked up racial dynamics that they had in the Titans at that time, that the only black character they had, Mal Duncan, hung out with all these white kids, and they all had superpowers, but he had nothing, you know, and I guess he was supposed to be like their moral center to keep them thinking about the little man, But all I saw was this brother hanging out with people who could kill him at any time. So, anyways, I got to find out what's going on with that. I don't know. And then that's when the smart ass, all jovial ass taxi cab driver, you know, just basically says, "So Batman, you know, what did he say? So Batman, don't he have a mask on his face and stuff?" And then that's when Mal, instead of doubling down on saying something stupid or saying something else that might kick the back, get a black man kicked out of a cab in New York City, he just asks the driver to drive. He just says, "Please, just drive." And says, "Man, just do your fucking job and quit worrying about what I'm doing." Right? He's just, "Man, just please, just drive." And then quick scene shift back to the fight. And you have Bumblebee flying around and she's going, "Woohoo!" One of those type of deals. Trying to sound like David Price at the beginning of 11 o'clock comics. And, they can't catch her because she's going too fast. And I think that Abnett was trying to go for a lighthearted, "Ha ha ha, you can't get me, you big galoots" type of feel for the panel. But Booth and Ratman gave her face on here is a serious, "I'm going to fuck you up" look on her face, you know. Next page, one blast to the face with, I want to point out, her right hand. She takes Mammoth out. One hand, one blast, takes him out. You know, Aquaman couldn't beat that dude with both his hands, you know. She just does this, boom, shot to the face. He's to blame. He gives love. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. Anyway, Jinx tries to shoot her with like a bad luck blast or something, but she just disappears, you know. And they're just like, "Oh, wait a minute, that's impossible." And when she comes back up, she's like an inch away from Jinx's face, right? Just an inch away. She's really small. She's like an inch, like the space. She would be like from the space from the in between the eyebrows to probably the bottom lip, because they have her bent over a little bit. But she'd probably be like to about the bottom lip. That's how big she is, right in front of Jinx's face. And she just, boom, just shoots her, knocks her the fuck out, right? And it's funny, after she does that, Bumblebee just flies around real back, real quick, and shoots Shimmer, takes Shimmer out by blasting her right in her spine, like around the L1, L2 era. And Gizmo's just screaming, "Where's she at? Where's she at?" And then right around that time, it's when Simon's like, "You know, Mrs. Duncan, you're starting to frustrate me." Right? He's just sitting here. He's watching all his muscle get knocked out. Right? One hand, she one-shotted Mammoth, one-shotted Jinx, one-shotted and possibly crippled Shimmer. Because realize, when she shot Mammoth, she pretty much, let me make sure, yeah, she took him off his feet, okay? And this, and his whole thing is he's strong as fuck, right? And she shoots him off his feet, right? She pretty much launches Jinx all the way off her feet, flying back feet, you know, several feet, right? And then she shoots Shimmer right in the back. Shimmer should not be walking, okay? With as much force as it looks like she used, Shimmer should probably never be walking again, unless she gets that Felicity Smoke type surgery. Okay. Now, Simon grabs her with his mind and said that since she messed up his enterprise, Now, you have ruined this enterprise, Mrs. Duncan. Something must be salvaged. I will identify and extract the most valuable part of you, the part that made you, you. Now, for the trouble you've caused. Oh, no. I'm sorry. First he says, done, it's mine, right? So he took something. Then he said, now for the trouble you caused, I'm going to fry your mind, right? And she's like, oh, she's clutching her head. You can tell she's in a lot of pain. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Isn't Lilith like right there, crumpled on the ground? Very next page, you see Lilith clobbering the hell out of him. You know, she punches the hell out of Simon, knocks him the fuck out like he was Devo. Okay, one punch, he's on the ground. Now the stance she's in is definitely, once again, could not be done in, you know, no human being could stand that way, throw a punch and knock Debo out, all right? But Liz did it. And she's like, sometimes it's not about the psionics, you son of a bitch. Right? I remember a day when you couldn't say son of a bitch in a comic book. At least not in an all-ages comic book. All right, so then she goes over and she's like, Karen, are you all right? And Karen's like, my head really hurts. You know, and everybody's thinking, well, shit, yeah, your head's going to hurt. You just got simonized. All of a sudden, out of the ground comes Donna Troy. She's ripping shit up. So, all right, now I'm annoyed. She's about to say, let's get it on or some shit like that. Or let's whoop some ass or let's fuck these motherfuckers up. She was about to say something, but the only thing she could say is, what the hell happened? Right? And Lilith's like, Karen happened, but, you know, we got to get her some help. Simon did something to her mind, something aggressive, you know? And then Mal shows up. He's dressed in a suit, a costume with a mask. And he says, I'm here for you, Bumblebee. Where? Hello? All right, this episode's gonna sound like a fucking train wreck, I can tell already. Anyway, so Mal shows up, and he's like, you heard other. So he's just like, can somebody explain what's going on? And I thought it was kind of funny that Don is just like, your wife just took down the five all by herself. And, you know, Lilith, who actually was the one who knocked out Simon's, just like, oh, we're fine. Relax. He goes up to her. Mal goes up to Karen and he's like, Karen, honey, are you okay? What happened? And she's like, I'm fine, really. But have we met? And, you know, and he's being a husband. Like, yeah, haha, funny. It's just a mask. And then she's like, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude, but I just don't remember you at all. And all of a sudden you see this big shocked look on his face. Which, once again, like I said, you start fucking around with people's brains and their memories and their personality. It's fucked up, you know? It just is. Okay, so back at Titan's Tower, Lilith explains to the others that while Karen is fine physically, Simon took a portion of her memory and sent it somewhere else. Karen doesn't know Mal at all and doesn't even remember her baby. Royce says that her memory must be... exactly what does he say? Because they give it a certain name. An engram. They said this engram thing must have value. Must be worth something to whoever the freaking five are working for. And I like the way they call them freaking five instead of fearsome five. Although we all know which F word he would use if this wasn't a book ostensibly for children. And then she's like, yeah, whoever. Dick and Wally are looking into that right now. And this is the first time, you know, Dick and Wally have had any kind of a speaking role in the entire book, right? It's on the last page. Dick basically tells Wally that even though that the five are on their way to Rikers Island and they aren't talking at all, he still figured out who was behind the whole Meta Solutions company.
It turns out that is a shell corporation owned by a shell corporation owned by a shell corporation. But eventually, he figured out that it was Hive, which came out in what, New Teen Titans Volume 2, I believe. Not Volume 2, Issue 2, Volume 1, Issue 2, you know, going way back. They were selling parts, excuse me, parts. Powers, let's try that, on the black market, which is what they did a long time ago with Grant Wilson. Dick says it's been so long since they first encountered the Hive that he almost forgot the history that they share with the Hive, you know? And while he's saying that, while they're having this conversation, standing a long way away, looking at a pair of some really cool looking binoculars, it's Deathstroke the Terminator. Says next, the Lazarus contract, which according to the DC All Access thing they have at the end of each issue of everything they do, the Lazarus contract is a crossover event between Titans, Teen Titans, and Deathstroke. The issues are Titans 11, this is Titans 10, so Titans 11, Teen Titans 8, Deathstroke 19, and ending in Teen Titans Annual, The Lazarus Contract number one, which is kind of appropriate because, you know, the Lazarus Contract is a playoff of the Judas Contract, which also ended in an annual. In fact, I know a lot of people who read the first three parts of the Judas Contract. No, three, four. Well, they read all of the beginning of the Judas Contract, but they didn't get annuals, so they didn't realize that that's where the story ended. So I like this issue. I really did, or else I want to talk about it for an hour. I'm glad I read it. I don't know if this would be enough to get me to continue picking up the book. You know, I'm curious as to what's going to happen with Bumblebee, but that's just because I have an affection for the character going all the way back to, you know, what, Jesus, 40 years now. But if this was the very first comic book I ever read, no, if it was the very first comic book I ever read, yeah, this would bring me back, you know. Bring me back. This would get me to pick up the next one. It would bring me back for more. And this, I could see this as being a good gateway because I'd want to find out more. Because, you know, I'm just sitting here and I want to know what happened with Mal and how he got his powers. And that's going backwards. I would want to know about the history between Hive and the Titans. And, you know, I'd want to know who they are. If this is the first comic book I picked up, I wouldn't know who Deathstroke the Terminator even was at the very ending. So I'd want to know, wow, who is this guy? You know, who's this guy? You know, what's going to happen with Bumblebee? So yeah, I take that back. I was going to say, I don't know if it would make me want to buy another one. And even if I was a avid collector and this was like, for some odd reason, would be on my, on the fence of whether or not I want to keep it or drop it, this would make me want to keep it because I think they stopped the one storyline. They finished it. They finished the story, but they've opened up the door for other stuff. So yeah, I like it, and I would recommend it. That if well, if you're a Titans fan, you're probably already reading it. If you're not, I don't know if this would be a good one to say, hey, check this out. Because if you haven't read Teen Titans, or you should say Titans by now, then there's probably a reason why you don't want to. You know what I mean? But yeah, I like this issue, and I would say, yeah, pick it up if you get an opportunity. I'm glad I got it, you know? Anyway, it's been almost an hour. It's been almost an hour of this episode. However, it is currently 1 o'clock in my time, and I started this thing. What time did I start this episode? I started it at about 9:30. Yeah, there's just been a lot of life going on in between in between those doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo- And for right now, I am done. I'm done making a lot of noise, a lot of comic book noise. Take it easy.
I'm going to see.